So, the man that is on his way is very controversial. If he has an opinion, he is not afraid to let you hear about it. I got my good friend John Prosser on the way shortly to join me tonight. Bike Drive, episode 40, starts now. What's up, people? This your boy Viper, the man about tech, and welcome back to another episode of Viper Drive. This is the podcast about tech, hosted by the man about tech. And as I just alluded to in my introduction, let me introduce to you the host of Front Page Tech, the baddest man on social media today. They call him John Prosser. How you doing, bro?
I'm here. Hello. It's been a while. I took a hiatus from your podcast. It's good to be back.
You are always in hide, man, all the time.
But I'm always watching.
Yeah, that is true. I will give you that. You are always lurking. You're always lurking.
I'm always tonight? Out there somewhere. I'm good, man. How are you? Long time no see.
I know, right? I'm good. Yeah, it's hard to get you on a live stream. And when I do get you on a live stream, you usually don't have your camera on. So it's nice to see that you have the camera on tonight for your boy.
I was the guest, all right? If I'm in the schedule, I will appear. Here I am. Ta-da.
I appreciate you. We got a lot of
you have even put up with me if I came in without a camera?
Of course. I mean, that's semantic. And plus, this goes audio only at some point anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But gotcha. Got a lot to talk about. Not going to waste too much time tonight. But first thing I want to talk to you about is, you know, Microsoft, they unveiled their new devices at their event, I think it was last week. Yeah. And the big talk was about the Surface Neo and the Surface Duo. And you, Mr. John Prosser, had some very poignant opinions about the Surface Duo. Yeah. You are definitely verbose in stating that it is not a foldable device. So can you explain to us your views about the Surface Duo?
I don't understand how we're even calling it a foldable device. I feel like, okay, so we've had ZTE come out with stuff similar to this. We've had LG come out with similar stuff. Were we calling those foldable devices before this? Because those are just dual screen devices on a hinge. Right. But now, all of a sudden, since Microsoft did it and we're in like the midst of foldable stuff, we're going to call this a foldable phone. In that case, are laptops folding computers? Our doors, do you say, hey, can you unfold that door for me? if it opens and it closes, it's not folding and unfolding. It's opening and closing. It's on a hinge. The device itself isn't folding. None of the components of the device are folding. It's not folding technology. It's just two duplicate phones on a hinge that have software continuity to make the displays work in tandem. That's it. I don't understand what the confusing part is.
Now, you bring up a very interesting point, because by that definition, wouldn't the Galaxy Fold just be a device with a hinge in the middle? Because it has a hinge.
No. The display folds. The actual components of the device fold.
But it still folds because of a hinge, though.
If it's got, I'll put it this way, if it's got a crease, it folds. It's a folding phone.
Okay, I got you. Okay, all right.
You know what I mean, though? Yes, it has a hinge, but the actual like components of the device are folding. The display is actually folding.
Got you. Okay. So by your definition, the Mate X, the Huawei Mate X, would also be a foldable phone.
Yeah.
Okay. So in your opinion, the Surface Duo and the Axon M or whatever the hell they call it, those are not foldable phones. Those are folding devices. Okay.
No, I've had dual screen monitors for years. If I put a hinge in that, is that all of a sudden folding?
You make a very solid point. Very solid point.
You know who else shares the same opinion? Mm-hmm. Rene Ritchie.
Ah.
In his video about it, he said these aren't foldable devices. And I trust Rene Ritchie.
Yeah, if you're going to trust somebody in the tech game, you definitely can trust Rene Ritchie. He's one of the best, man, no doubt.
So what do you think? You think these are foldable devices?
You know, truth be told, I haven't really given it much thought. I mean, I understand.
Think about it right now.
I understand what you're saying, that that it's really not a foldable device, because basically, like you said, you have two displays and they're separated by a hinge, and the hinge is what folds. Yeah. The displays aren't actually the folding part of the device. So I definitely get what you're saying, that those are not true foldable devices, because basically, you have two displays attached by a hinge. And like you said before, we don't call laptop folding devices, and laptops right. have the same thing. So I see your point. I can't really argue
yes.
with that.
Yes. That, and the Neo's the same way. It's just a laptop, except they replaced the on one half of the hinge where they have the keyboard. They just put another display there, just another device there, and duplicated it. It's still not a foldable device. I don't understand where we're getting this all from, or why now, all of a sudden, because Microsoft did it, these devices, these dual screen devices, are foldable.
I don't know. You know what it is, though. A lot of people are just excited to see drugs, new technology.
Drugs are doing this.
Oh, Lord. I don't know about all that. It's just that people are genuinely excited about something they perceive as new technology, and they're just going gaga. You know how that goes.
But, like, there are companies actually folding displays and folding devices right now. And we're going to give the same pass to Microsoft, who didn't do that. They just put devices on a hinge.
True story.
And to me, that looks goofy now, right? But this isn't coming out until next year. It's going to be even worse then.
Yeah, they're going to look...
Think about how many actual foldable devices will have been made by the time this comes out.
Right. Like the Duo, for all intents and purposes, the Duo looks archaic now, but it's not coming out for another 12 months, like you said. So when it comes out in 2020, it's going to look even more outdated than it looks already right now. It's kind of weird, but I guess that's what it is. Goofy. So me and you were watching a tech fight this past weekend. We'll get into your whole tech fight thing later on.
Yeah.
But okay. one of the questions of the tech fight were presented as, are foldables the future? So do you think, John Prosser, that foldables are the future?
No. It's a detour right now that we're taking because we're all bored.
Now, normally I would agree with you, but the only reason that I will detour from your opinion is because it seems like a lot of companies are getting in on the foldable technology party. We got Huawei. We got Samsung has the Fold. We got Microsoft doing their Duo, even though you don't consider it a foldable phone.
Yeah.
It is folding type technology. Obviously, the Axon M, they have their foldable thing. Apple has foldable patents, whatever that means. So it seems like there are several companies doing the research, doing the R&D, investing time and money into the foldable market. So it's hard to say that they're not the future when a lot of companies are investing and spending time on that.
Okay, so I think we're confusing. We're not going all the way here. When you say, are foldables the future, are foldable phones the future, I'm saying no. I'm not saying they're not part of the future.
Okay.
So I think companies will continue to do this stuff and try it. Companies like Apple have to make patents like that to protect themselves, period. Whether they're working on an idea or not, at least the idea that they have is protected if they want to pursue it. But these will be part of the future, especially for the next 5 years. But further than that, there will be a point where we move past this and we're like, what the hell were we doing?
So you feel like this foldable craze is just a stepping stone or a pit stop, more or less?
It's because we're bored. Like, nobody in the mass market will be buying these things as their daily phones. It's right now, the only people talking about this is us. Because we're bored, and right now it's cool. It'll be a novelty. You show this to a regular consumer, and they're going to be like, wow, that's nuts. You can fold this? This is where technology is? But let them use that for a week. And I honestly believe that folding devices are more of a roadblock than an answer to a problem. It just adds a whole other layer of things that is just unnecessary. It's change for the sake of change.
Yeah, but you know how it is. I mean, even if they're not the future, and we have to make this pit stop to advance further on in technology, because
we're just bored. This is just what we're doing when we're bored.
But this foldable stuff will lead to more technological advancements down the road, though. I mean, you can't disagree with that.
Like how the Note Edge, we thought that was crazy when the side of it was like drastically curved, but now in some way, shape, or form, all phones have a curved display. I mean, even the iPhone has one, like on the bottom, the display curves under it to fit the bezel.
Right.
That's just normal, but you can see how it went from like this crazy, ridiculous thing to we actually implemented it in a practical way. In some ways, consumers don't even see that. Like the iPhone, you don't see the curved display.
No, barely. You really have to look for it. And even then, it's hard to detect. You're right.
I feel like we're looking in the wrong direction. I think people that are telling me that I'm wrong about this are people that are saying that I'm short-sighted and I don't understand the future when in reality, I'm looking way past this stuff. I'm not looking at like the next 2 years or next 3 years of, yeah, sure, we're going to have foldable stuff. But I think we're all looking for the future to be held in our hands. Like, what's going to happen to these devices that we carry every day? When in reality, that's not it. I don't even think we're considering the actual future, which is wearables. That's all this of the stuff that we hold is going away, and it'll be stuff that we wear instead that's the future.
Speaking of wearables, I think you make a very excellent point, because there have been a couple of videos out on YouTube now about the Focus by North, which is what I thought somebody just mentioned in the chat. And that tech looked good. I'm excited about that tech. We know that Apple may or may not be working on some AR glasses. Obviously, we have the Focus by North out there. Google has tried and failed with Google Glasses, but they'll probably make another attempt.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on wearable glasses and things like that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Pretty soon, like I'd say within the next 20 years, that'll be the norm, where we don't just get prescription glasses that help us see. It's like part of, they're actually AR capable. And like, I would love the ability to just like, what you're walking on the street. And I always wondered this since I was a kid, like when I'm in the passenger seat of a car as a kid and we're driving and I look at other cars, I always wonder like, what if along every driver, like there was a pop-up above the car that showed where that driver was going? Like, I think it would just be cool to know what other human beings are doing, the humans that I can see right now. And that's like a very near part of the future within the next 20 years of like real life wearing glasses. You walk up, you see somebody in Starbucks and their Facebook profile pops up. If Facebook is still a thing.
Nah, you know that it's not going to be that in deep with all the privacy concerns that are out there right now. There's no way.
Okay. Think about it this way. Think about how, you know how much information we give up right now?
Mm-hmm.
Think about how weird and scary that would have been to hear 10 years ago. But we all do it. It becomes the norm. And I think, especially with how much these companies are pushing the limits, the privacy concerns that we have now will slowly just drift away, because it'll be what we're used to, or we're willing to give up more of that information in exchange for the tech that we get. That's what we're doing now. We're giving up personal information in exchange for what we're getting from these companies. And pretty soon, unless you're going to go off the grid and be a hermit in a log cabin, it's going to be really, I think it's really, really hard now to avoid this stuff.
I mean, but it's one thing to give up information. It's another thing to like look at a heads up display and see where someone's going. Now, I think
I know, but I'm saying like we would have been super scared of what we do now 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So right. Think about what we're going to be willing to give up in 20 years that we won't even think about. Oh, should I give this up? It'll just be the accepted norm. Like, our kids aren't going to think about privacy concerns like we do, because they were just born into this. They think it's the norm.
Oh, absolutely. Like kids that are born to the iPad age. I mean, some kids probably never owned a computer. Like, what is that?
Yeah, our kids aren't going to complain about privacy stuff. They just grew up. They were born with a Facebook profile to them. So yeah, they're not going to have the same concerns that we do.
You make it.
I'm not saying they shouldn't, or they should. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you're just saying that by the time they get into existence, the world is going to have a different normal to it. It's just going to be second nature, more or less.
And it may be malicious, it may not be, but that's exactly what these companies are doing on purpose. They're making this the norm.
Oh, absolutely. They're trying to make the most money possible. And data is currency these days.
Yeah.
Data is currency. So I want to talk to you about a video that you made recently.
Okay.
You made a very controversial video. Apple is better without Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
I'm curious, what spawned that video? Why did you make that video?
Really the reactions to the Apple event, the last one where they announced, you know, iPhone 11, iPhone 11 Pro and Pro Max, seeing Apple. I mean, we've been seeing it, especially the past year where I think last October or March, it was March, they had an event literally just for services, and seeing them transition, it was becoming more and more clear to me that, and I mean, I've known that this is what they need to do just to survive, but seeing it, it's really, I don't think we appreciate this sort of stuff. Like, what we were watching this past year with Apple is what will be in like videos, you know, years from now when we talk about this pivot, this point in history for Apple. Like, we always talk about like the transition from like when Steve Jobs came back to Apple and what he did, and then what happened when Steve Jobs left Apple. We always talk about this. We always look at points in history. And I think that we're watching a pivot right now in real time, and a lot of people just don't realize that and don't appreciate it for what's happening. And I think it's going to happen for the rest of the industry too. It's interesting right now to see like Google and Samsung and these companies try to replicate Apple's business model when Apple's starting to go the other way. They're starting to back up and go more services, software sort of deal instead of just being a strict hardware company. But after that Apple event and after seeing them be willing to take loss in exchange for market share was a very interesting pivot point for me. And so I started to write a video. I think I wanted to just mention it like as a portion of Front Page Tech, but then it quickly became this bigger idea. And then the title came up in my head because I strongly believe that Apple's better off right now without Steve Jobs, just in this landscape. Not saying that Tim Cook would have been the best CEO throughout all these years. I'm glad we had Steve Jobs, obviously. None of this would exist without him. But right now, for this point in history and the way the market is going, Tim Cook is a better man for the job, in my opinion. And when I had that idea and that title came up in my head, I was like, okay, I like this. And so I had the title, and then I started making my points, and like I had the title first and then wrote the video, basically.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting the way that you do that, because a lot of times I make the video before I even have the title. And I know everybody does it their own different way, but it definitely helps when you know what the title is first, and then you can craft the video around the title that you put on it.
I know the title before any video I make because I like to know the narrative I'm going with. Right. Because I like to tell a story really no matter what I'm talking about or go into the video with a certain emotion to help the viewer feel like my own opinions and what my feelings are going into a topic. So I like to have the title first and know the narrative first and then record the video according to that.
Now, I watched the video. The video is very well done. And the premise of your video is that you didn't feel like Steve Jobs had the business acumen to adjust to today's climate. Now, I think that was the general crux of your video. You felt like Tim Cook was a better business leader in that sense. So when I made my podcast responding to your video, some people had commented about how Steve Jobs was a good businessman. That's why when he came back to Apple in 97, he streamlined the pipeline to eliminate the SKUs that Apple had to make it simpler for the customer. But yeah, I see you shaking your head, so I'm guessing you're disagreeing. So tell me about that.
I think Steve Jobs was a passionate businessman, but I think he was more passionate about what he was making, more passionate about the products than the business. And I think it's the opposite for Tim Cook. I think Tim Cook's more passionate about business. Steve Jobs didn't cut SKUs and like streamline the product stuff because he knew it would sell better. He just wanted to make it less complicated and focus on the projects and the products that Steve wanted to focus on. And I think that the difference right now is you've heard me say compromise over innovation a bunch of times. I think at that point in history, we needed innovation more than compromise. We needed stuff to answer the problems of society that didn't exist yet. And that's why I don't think Tim Cook would have worked back then. And that's exactly why Steve Jobs worked then. But now we have so many other companies pushing the market forward, pushing the industry forward and innovating, that maybe Steve Jobs could have kept up. He would have been slower. Maybe what the moves that he made or the progress he made would have mattered more. But the industry is moving too fast for Steve Jobs now. And that's the issue. That's why I think Tim Cook is better right now. And I think that Steve Jobs would have been stubborn enough to keep his own pace and keep making things the way he wanted to make it. And they still would have been incredible, remarkable products, but they wouldn't be the number one company in the world. They would just be Apple making really good stuff and still have a really passionate fan base. I'm just a fan right now of Tim Cook making a lot of products for a lot of the people. I think making products for the many instead of the few right now is what Apple needs to do. And that's what I'm really interested in, seeing Apple like get creative about where the revenue's coming from. And I want them to be a super powerful, super big company and make products for the many. That's just what my opinion is. Probably different than a lot of people that are really passionate about Apple and really passionate about Steve and think that he put more love into products and all that stuff. He did, but we're still selling more products now with Tim. I don't think Steve Jobs would have ever sold 200, 300 million iPhones in a year.
No, because back in Steve Jobs' day, there was only one iPhone. There was not two iPhones. And
I'm not saying he would never adapt. Right. But just not to the level that I think the industry needed them to.
Right. It's interesting because I definitely agree with your point of view about how Tim Cook is a better leader for today's climate than Steve Jobs would have been. Steve Jobs didn't even want to entertain a stylist at all. So it's hard for me to fathom that we would have had a styling for the iPad and Steve Jobs would have had his way, but that's the way he was. And I don't know if you have read the Steve Jobs autobiography by Walter Isaacson, but in there, Walter talked about how Steve Jobs lived in his own reality distortion field. It was basically the world as he saw it. It was his way or the highway in Apple. And
which really worked back then. I don't think it would work now.
Correct, because like you said, Steve Jobs wanted to figure out what the customer needed before the customer knew what they needed. But like you keep saying, today the market doesn't need innovation, it needs compromise. And Steve Jobs wasn't really about compromise that way. Yeah. So like I said, I agree with your video. It was a great video. You brought up very excellent points about his mindset and how it would go today. And I agree wholeheartedly with the video.
I think it's really easy to teach or tell consumers what they need before they know they need it, when the customer doesn't have any experience with that line of products. So when the iPhone comes out, it's a brand new thing and you're creating that experience. It starts with that. It starts with iPhone. But now you have to match the consumer's expectations, because they all have experience now with smartphones and they use them the way they want to. And they've let those devices like be a part of their life in a very specific way. And it's different for everybody, what everyone uses them for specifically. Like everyone has their own schedule with how they use these things. And now I think that companies have to consider that more than ever to try to be that device that fits into people's lives instead of trying to introduce that into their lives. It already exists now. Consumers already have that experience. And now these companies have to fit into their lives. And I don't think Steve would have adapted as well as Tim. I mean, if you look a handful of years later after Steve died, but they sold, that was the most popular selling iPhone ever, the iPhone 6S.
Yes.
That was just a handful of years after Steve died. In fact, that was the design after, that was the first design worked on after Steve. So like Steve was part of the beginning process of the iPhone 5 design. The iPhone 6 was like the first one without him and his vision. The iPhone 6S was the most selling phone of all time. iPhone anyway.
No doubt. So I want to change gears a little bit here. It's funny the way this worked out, because I put out a tweet, I think it was last week, about how I was noticing how some journalists, real journalists, were frowning their nose up at YouTubers, because there's been this long ongoing battle for a while now, at least in the minds of journalists anyway, that they're better than YouTubers or they're superior to YouTubers. During the Apple event, I saw some tweets from journalists about how YouTubers were cheering at the Apple event. And I think some journalists like were quoted saying those YouTubers and this and that and the other. It just irked me, because I'm of the mindset that just because you have a journalism degree does not make you better than a YouTuber. If a journalist got stripped of the backing of their tech publication, if they had to start all over on YouTube, they will quickly see how difficult YouTube is. So now this leads me up to the video that you made about the reputable tech publication taking their cue from a 22-year-old college kid with a shady track record at best, not doing their research. So I'm interested to get your take on the whole journalist, real journalist versus YouTuber thing, and how these tech publications are not putting in the research that they should be.
Well, you were part of the inspiration for me doing that, because I was watching your live stream where you were talking about how the tech publications sort of like to water down the importance of the YouTube space. And I also remember the first time I was in your chat. This is how usually video ideas come about. I'm in your chat and I said something about making a video about Ben Geskin. You said no. You said don't. You said you don't know about messing with Ben Geskin. And then I did it. So knowing you did a live stream specifically about that, and then literally seeing Ben Geskin lean into stuff, it was funny at first. I was like, he's really going in, like making all these concept renders and all this other stuff and really leaning into this theory. And I was like, haha, that's funny. But then I was doing what I do every day, checking tech news. And everyone was covering it. And I was like, oh, come on. Like, you've got to be kidding me. And it got more and more reckless. And I was just like, okay, I hate this. Because the stuff that I want to cover, I can't cover, because the top story of the day is this fake iPhone. And we've talked about, like, these journalists before. We bring them up a lot, especially, like, BGR and stuff. And Forbes, Gordon Kelly, or whatever his name is.
Oh, Lord.
So then I was just like, all right, well, this because I wanted to make an update about the Ben Geskin thing, but then it also happened that everyone was covering fake iPhones, so I just made an episode about the two, because I was thinking about how, like, reckless Ben is making the stuff, but then I was like, is it really even Ben's fault? Like, he's doing this because he knows the media is going to react to it, and it's the media's fault for being megaphones for this garbage. That it always happens. And it doesn't matter to them. Like, their reputation doesn't matter, because when it doesn't happen, they can just point the finger and blame Ben.
Mm-hmm.
So YouTubers do the same thing. YouTubers, the tech blogs, they just all covered it as if it's real.
Yeah, you're right.
And then mentioning Ben Geskin, saying reliable leaker Ben Geskin. And I was like, so we started doing research, because I wanted to be honest. I wanted to tell people, okay, this is how many things Ben has gotten right, and this is how many things he's gotten wrong. Turns out he only got one thing right. Ever. Right. One leak, and then everything after that was wrong. So I don't know where people forgot, or like the lines got blurry, but it happened.
Well, I think a lot of it is, like you said, once he got that one thing right, people kept riding the hype train, and then nobody really did their thorough research into him. But when I told you not to make a video about him, I thought you were going to attack him personally. So I'm like, don't do that, don't do that. But you didn't attack him personally. You attacked the credibility and his track record, which is fair game. If you're going to come out here and claim to be a leaker or something, you got it. Like you always say, your credibility matters. You have to be right. You can't come out here claiming to be a leaker and be wrong half the time, or more than half the time. What kind of leaker is that? That's
a lot of the, like, when I was back in the iPhone XR debate, where I was saying that it was going to outsell the rest, and everyone was like, no. People were questioning why it was so important for me to be right. And now, finally, a year later, people are starting to learn why that mattered to me. Because now you see the side effects of having an awful track record and no credibility.
Especially in what we do. Like you said, your credibility matters. You have to be right. You can't, like, because here's the thing. Like, you could be funny. You could be entertaining. You could have a personality. You can have all that stuff on YouTube. But if you don't know what the hell you're talking about, if you're wrong most of the time, nobody's going to stick with you. People are going to unsubscribe. Yeah. They're going to unfollow you because they can't trust you. Because above all else, John, as you know, it's all about having that relationship of trust with your viewer, with your audience. If your audience can't trust you, why the hell would they watch you? Yeah. Like, you got to have trust. And in order to gain that trust, your credibility matters. You have to be right. Right. Of course, we all make mistakes, and there are going to be times where that we're all wrong, and that's fine. But in what we do, you have to be right a lot more than you are wrong. Otherwise, you will not be able to maintain an audience, and nobody's going to give a damn what you say, as you've eloquently stated before.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to share your opinions or take risks like that. You could just, like, I could just cover the news as it is and just leave it at that. But right now, more than creating video or hosting or anything, my creative high comes from credibility right now. It comes from, like, I love taking the risks right now, and, like, long-term risks. Like, I really love doing the iPhone XR stuff. And that was going to be a year payoff. Like, it wasn't like we were going to all find out the answer next month. I had to commit to that shit and wait a year to have any sort of results for that. And that's why I just love saying the things that people won't say and taking the risks that people won't take. I love that. I love being like, no, this isn't the next iPhone. I'll pay you $5,000, Ben Geskin, if you're right. I love doing that. I could be wrong and have to pay him $5,000, but it'll look awesome if I don't have to.
I think right now you're looking pretty good on that bet.
I know. But I love, like, what other YouTubers are you going to see take these risks? I love being that guy. And I love, like, when I put out a lot of these videos, I get text messages from a lot of your favorite YouTubers, the big guys, that thank me and talk about how I'm saying the things they wish they could say. And that's right. What I love. I love being able to say the things people wish they could say.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it. I know how you are, so I believe it. But like I said, it still irked me, John. It irked me to no end how these real journalists think just because they have a piece of paper that makes them automatically better than YouTubers. Like, no.
And we have to do their entire job. So, like, they get to write and send it off to an editor, where we are the writer, the editor, the talent number one. We're their job with an extra layer of video. We also make the video that they don't make. They just write it and send it to an editor, and it gets published on some awful blog somewhere. Whereas we do their job plus an entire other layer We're the traffic too. Like, they just got hired to a publication that already had traffic. I would love to see them try to write stuff and have people care about them specifically. I would love to see them, like, write the articles that they write. I take that back. 90% of the people that read the articles, it just comes from The Verge. They don't know the author or care to know the author.
Correct.
I would love them to make and create their own following.
Amen. Exactly. And that's why I said, if you strip them of their tech credentials, their pub backing, and put them on YouTube, how would you do? You would find out real fast that it's not as simple as you think it is, because I'm guarantee you 95% of these real journalists have no idea what entails doing an entire YouTube video front to back. They have no idea. They think they know, but they have no clue.
I've been thinking about this, but I can't figure out a way for it to make sense. I would love to give up the Front Page Tech channel for a day to one of these famous tech publicizer people and be like, you have my channel for the day. Make something. I would love to see what happens with that.
Oh, wow. Oh,
by yourself, not a team of people. Woo. By yourself. Make it.
That would be an epic train wreck. Here's the thing. I'm not saying that all journalists are like this, because me and you, we have very cool journalist friends that have actual real journalist backgrounds who know what they're doing. They know their stuff and they respect what we're doing on YouTube and they don't frown their nose up. But a lot of these journalists out here, especially what I've been seeing on Twitter, especially at tech events and things like that, I see y'all. I got my eye on you all. I see these comments that y'all be making. It's not cool, man. It's not cool.
They're worried about YouTubers like taking their territory without realizing that it done already happened.
Really?
Years ago.
Really? Canceled. While we're on the topic of journalism and things like that, I would be remiss if people would probably be mad at me if I didn't ask about this, John. But creator mindset. What's the status?
Oh, come on, man.
I gotta ask.
Well, we started doing Recycle Bin again, and Brian moved last weekend. So that's where, if anyone's wondering where it is this weekend, Brian moved. That's it. Oh, it's not gone. Like Creator Mindset. I just haven't updated Creator Mindset. That's all.
All right.
Every time, I'm like, oh, Viper's gonna ask.
Of course, you know my ass. They would get on me by the ass. They would get on me by the ass, man. All right. So let's get to the meat and potatoes, the good part of this podcast, the part that the people probably are wondering about. John Prosser, it's fight week, baby. Oh, yes. Oh, for those of y'all that are not aware, our good friend John Prosser here is going to be involved in a Saturday night tech fight this weekend.
Sure.
He is going up against LeBaron Burton. The fight will be on Tech King Mike's YouTube channel. Now, I got some questions, John, because you're aware of the tech fights and you're aware of how they go down. Now, you've watched a couple of them, I think. Yeah. But it was you that actually called out LeBaron. It wasn't the other way around.
Right. First of all, who would call me out in the right mind? I gotta pick and choose.
Hey, don't say what. Hey, I'm pretty sure there are a bunch of people that would love to have you in a tech ring, man. Don't. Hey.
I've been seeing. I've just been like even before the tech fights, I've just known of LB for years. Like watched him in the community and stuff. And I see him in these tech fights, and I'm just like, okay, he should face me then. Because he's not exactly losing every fight he's in.
No.
And I love how, like, he and I, before tech fights and stuff, have, like, argued back and forth in chat, like, on your live streams or something before. And instead of letting him just talk about it, I wanted to see him be about it.
Ooh. Now, it's funny because, obviously, a lot of people have their money on John Prosser, but I think somebody in the chat got their money on LB. I mean, here's the thing, though, John. You can't underestimate a man. The dude has a Kevlar chin, man. He can take a licking and keep on ticking. The boy is legit. Like, even though he's not a creator.
But he hasn't gone against anybody like me.
This isn't true.
I'd say the next biggest threat that would be like me would be you, and you beat him.
Correct.
So.
But here's I'm wondering. What made you call him out, though? Wait, what were you thinking when you did that? What went into that?
I think I wanted to humble him.
Here we we go.
I've been seeing him walk around these YouTube streets. He's like the tech journalist that won't stay out of my business. So I'm just like, so I wanted to bring him down a peg. That's what I wanted to do.
Oh, man. Oh, my God. He called him a tech journalist. Oh, my God. Oh, man. Woo. Now, it's highly unlikely, and it is, but I'm just going to say, John, be careful, man. Be careful, guys. It's not gonna be a walk in the park, baby. It's really not, dude.
He gets knocked down, has to try to talk his way out of it with another question, and that's gonna be every round until eventually the judges just go, "All right, man, like we just need to put you down now."
You know, I know you don't like to listen to me, but I'm warning you, bro. It's not as easy as it looks. You better be on your game, baby. I know you will be. But
I'm impressed by his ability to like. During the knockout rounds for him to talk his way back in, but right. That's without rebuttal. Like he gets to say whatever he wants and he just has to convince the judges.
Right.
If there was a knockout round and he got to make a point, but then I got to also make a point to get him out of the fight.
You might need to take them to Tech Key Mike. That's an idea. That's a cool idea.
Well, I mean, you can be really good at answering questions by yourself. That's not part of the debate though.
Right.
You can't lose a debate by always having to answer a question for yourself to get back into the fight. So I can win. How does that work? If I win every round, but he keeps talking himself out of being knocked down, when does the fight end?
I think at some point the judges will just realize that it's a wrap. I mean, I think usually there's five rounds. So theoretically, if you knock him out three rounds, then it's pretty much game over anyway. So
I will say he impressed me a lot this past weekend.
I
was all about that fight. Like the first one. Nah, whatever.
We're not talking about that. No.
but with him and Tech Rant, ooh, I was all about that fight.
I think
Saturday Night Tech fights are my new thing.
Dude, aren't they great? They are great. They are.
I've seen bits and pieces, but last weekend I sat through the whole thing and was like, all right, I get it. It was addicting. Because I was like, all right, I'm going to head out. But then it's just hard. It's just hard because then you get into a nail biter and you're like, oh, is this it? Is this it? Nope. The bear's back up.
That's like I said, he got a Kevlar chin, man. Like you think he's out, but then he just like you said, he talks and quick right back into the fight, and he's going in. But he got knocked out twice by Tech Red, got back in the fight two times, and ended up knocking out Tech Red the next round. Like
I will say, I respect him more now to the point where I will feel bad beating him.
But you know, it's funny because when me and him were doing our trash talking for our fight, I'm like, bro. I do this every night. You sell popcorn. I make video, bro. What are you talking about? And it's similar with you. Like, me and you, we're in the ring. We like,
this is a popcorn fight. I wouldn't be so confident, but it's right.
This is not a popcorn fight. This is a tech debate. And me and you do this practically every night. We have people in our comment section coming out our throat every night. So having a tech debate is not outside of our norm because we do this all the time. This is what we do.
I have to debate every day in front of like 50,000 people a day. Yes. That's what I do. But I have to like combat the opinion of all of them at once.
Yes, because even though they like us and they subscribe to us, there are people in our community that disagree with us, and we have to quell that. That's the thing. Like we were talking about earlier in this podcast, credibility matters. Being right matters, because if you're not right, if you have a varying opinion and you can't find a way to come to some type of an agreement to disagree or agree or whatever, then you lose that person. So you have to figure that out. That's a part of what we do. And that's the beautiful thing of YouTube, that we can have that discourse with our audience to where if one of them does disagree, then we can try to talk to them and try to figure out where the disagreement comes in, and we can try to win them back or do whatever it is. But me and you do this all the time. People like, this is the thing. People think that making YouTube videos is as simple as hitting record, uploading, and then you run away. It's not that simple. There's a lot that goes into it. Especially the bigger your audience gets, the harder it gets, because then you got more people to worry about, and you got more opinions to try to quell and calm down. It's just it's a craziness. So these tech fights are basically just live video, more or less.
Oh, poor LeBaron, poor guy.
Yo, like I said the past weekend, LeBaron is probably the greatest tech fighter I've ever seen, man. The dude just keep coming
until next weekend.
But
I'm aiming to be the boss fight after this fight. I'm looking to be like everyone else can fight, and that's what they work up to. I'll come back to Saturday Night Tech fight. I'll come back as the boss fight. I'll be end all be all, baby.
like it's funny because like I was saying, he's very good. He's probably the greatest tech fighter yet. But there is a reason why I called you the baddest man on social media today. Oh, and not just because it is what it is. It just it happens to be true. You are that dude. So I don't know, LeBaron. I don't know, bro.
I've picked bigger battles than LB, that's for sure.
Oh, I'm sure you have. Yeah, no doubt, man. No doubt. El Jefe called you the Bowser of tech. So I know we were talking about your next video idea. I know you were gonna work on the innovation argument, but Taylor the Tech jumped in there and he kind of jumped on your idea.
I'm still doing it.
You're still doing it? Okay.
Yeah. In fact, after watching his, it helped me leave out certain stuff that I was gonna say and sort of streamline the things that I want to say. So it didn't hurt.
It's funny how that works. Like when you think somebody stole your video idea, but then you watch the video, like, actually I can attack it from that way. Yeah.
Funny how that works. So normally I'd be angry, but I've heard Drew say a lot of the stuff that I've said. Like, we have very similar minds, so it didn't bug me at all that he came out with that video, because he said a lot of the same stuff I've said. If it came out of nowhere and it was clearly just him taking my idea, that'd be one thing. But I've heard him say the same stuff.
Yeah. Drew is.
Plus, I love Drew.
Drew, if nothing else, he is very consistent. So yeah, he is definitely consistent. So
almost called 911.
Don't do that. We do not need the authority. We are good to go.
Save those for Saturday night.
So, John, man, we got to talk about the Pixel 4 pricing, man. I keep trying to tell you that it's not going to be $800. And you keep saying that they got it. Now, it would be good if they could hit that, John. That's what they need to hit. But
what are you going to do when it hits $800?
I'm going to be like, go Google. Good game, Google. That's what I'm going to do. I just don't see it happening.
Well, when I originally reported on the leaks of $1,000 or whatever, Google reached out to me and was like, that's not it.
Okay.
They didn't tell me what it was, but they're just like, that's not entirely accurate, whatever the hell that means. And then we have these other leaks, the Canadian pricing, that if you convert them, end up being $789 or something.
You know better than that. You can't do a fake conversion.
That still leaves us around $800.
If you do the conversion based on what happened last year, the Pixel 3 started at $800 last year. So at the very least, you're going up $50 if we are to believe the Canadian pricing. So it's going to be at least $850.
Yeah. And anything over $850, I would be very disappointed by. Actually, I don't need to be disappointed. It would just be a mistake for Google.
It would be a mistake. Now,
trying to say like they should keep it $699 like with the iPhone 11, but they're not that company. They can't do that.
They haven't
earned the ability to charge $700, and they haven't earned the right to charge $1,000.
No. Apple's in league of their own. They can't do what Apple's doing. They can't do that.
And this, I think a lot of people confuse, like, this phone isn't competing with the iPhone 11. I don't know what people are talking about. This phone is competing with Android devices.
Yeah, but I mean, John, look at how the phone looks. I mean, apparently Google feels like they're competing with Apple because the damn thing looks like an iPhone 11.
Not going to matter. Yeah, no one's gonna choose this over an iPhone 11.
Correct.
But no one that was looking at a Pixel is going to be like, never mind, I'll buy the iPhone 11. Because it's not a hardware thing, it's a software thing.
So why is Google trying to design a Pixel that looks just like the iPhone? Or why did they do that, I should say? Well, what is their end game with that?
Because then you don't have to design your own phone.
Oh, you could do better than that.
You don't. That design works. That's why does every other Android manufacturer do the same thing? Why for the entirety of 2018 did every Android phone have a notch looking like the iPhone? Because you don't have to put R&D into that. The design works. It's already there.
There was a lot of flack about the notch, though. A lot.
Not enough. People still bought it.
Well, that's because of the iPhone. But the
company still wanted to look like the iPhone.
I told y'all back in the 2018 it's gonna be Nacho Mania, and I was right. I didn't know I was gonna be that damn right, though. Good lord.
I'm all for the Pixel 4 having the forehead.
Oh yeah. I'm glad it doesn't have a notch anymore. That was terrible.
I think I would love to see an iPhone with that. Maybe not that big of a forehead, but I'd be okay with a larger top forehead without the notch. Oh, I'd be all for that.
I remember you calling the Pixel 3 notch a grandma saggy titties notch last year.
And then,
when I was in California doing the video with Jonathan Morrison, and I said that, and his face just dropped. It was great.
Oh, man.
Oh, it was great.
What a disaster of a phone.
The Pixel 3, it was. But here's Viper, the other thing.
Viper, do you have the phone?
No.
Okay.
No, at least not yet. I do believe they may send me one, but I don't have it yet.
Well, Google's been sending these phones out sneaky, like, early, and I didn't know if you were not telling me something.
I have not got any information or no delivery, so nope, not me.
Are you telling the truth?
I'm not that important. At least not yet anymore.
I wouldn't say that.
I ain't that important, but no, I don't have a phone. They did not send me one. I think they are, but probably closer to the event date.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I did see somebody on Twitter earlier today.
If I see a Pixel 4 leak plastered all over websites and I see it's a black hand holding it, I'm going to know. I'm going to know you got it and you lied to me just now.
Hey, I don't know about all that, but our buddy Jay Williams has Rinky casing for the Pixel 4 already, so maybe he has the one. Maybe he has it. I don't know. It ain't me, though. It ain't me.
I'm going to track you guys down. I'm going to find out.
I'm sure. But I've heard you say on your show that you are very excited about the Pixel 4. So what has you so excited?
I'm excited for Google to streamline their process here. I'm excited. I was excited for the Pixel 3 and 3A. Or no, not the Pixel 3. The 3A and 3A.
XL. Yeah.
Bigger. but I actually really, really love the feature set coming with the Pixel 4. And assuming that Android actually runs well this year on the phone made by Google, I'm really, really excited about it. That's one thing that for some reason they just seem to miss. Like, not only has the hardware been poorly designed, but also the software doesn't run well. And it's the phone made by Google that's supposed to be like an example of the best example of how Android should run.
I remember there were some phones delivered last year without the OS on them. Like, how do you do that? How does that happen?
Yeah.
But like you said, mainly every year there seems to be an issue with Pixel hardware. Last year it was overheating. The year before that, the displays were off. So who knows if we're going to get this year. Hopefully they figured it out this year, but I don't know.
And the thing is, Google won't learn. Like, everybody on the planet could decide not to buy this phone, and it won't teach Google anything. I think people are too held up on like, oh, this is Google's last chance. No, it's not. They don't care. They have so much money. Like, the success of Google isn't riding on the Pixel 4. This could flop, and it doesn't mean they still want to be a name in the market, still making the thing just so they can be participating. They don't need the money.
Correct. And I think
they are not a hardware company.
No, they are definitely not a hardware company, but I do believe they will sell more of them this year than they have in years past, because I do believe they're going to be available on all carriers this year. So they have that going for them.
Yeah. And people are sleeping on this stuff. They're like, no one buys these things. After the Pixel 3A and 3A XL, they snuck up in market share. They're like the number three or four in the U.S. Mm-hmm. They like snuck up on us.
Wait. Did you just say they're three or four in the U.S. in market share?
Yeah, like I think it's the U.S. They snuck up. It was like right after the 3A and 3A XL, Google, not the 3A or 3A XL was the third in the U.S. Just Google as a whole started taking up more market share.
Okay.
They snuck it up.
Yeah, the 3A and 3A XL were game changer for Google. Definitely, they were game changers, no doubt.
I don't think they could price this at $600, $700 because that's too close to the 3A prices. Mm-mm. And you know, just a few months from now, we'll get the 4A and 4A XL.
Right, assuming they plan to go that route again. But
I mean, I don't see why they wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, they've had, like you say, if it ain't broke, don't break it, right?
Yeah.
But I'm like you. I'm excited about this phone, too, because of all the technology that's coming into it. And then I'm excited to see if they can actually implement this Face ID-like technology that they're supposedly having on the phone.
Oh, Project Soul is cool.
That definitely. Now, I don't know how practical it's going to be with the hand gestures and things like that, but the technology is definitely the best of its kind. Yeah. So
what people are considering is, like, the gestures are just a side effect. Like, the actual technology is really, really cool, and the way it can be implemented in the future is really, really cool.
Oh yeah,
but it's just also gestures work, so why not implement them?
I remember I did a video a few months ago about Project Soli and the origins and things like that, and the technology is legit. Like, it is very, very precise technology.
I'm interested to see our first competitor to Face ID.
That too, yeah. Nobody's been able to do it.
Like,
up until
everyone's
now
talking about, oh, Android has Face ID. No, no, it doesn't.
No, no.
Yeah, not actual depth sensing. No.
Please stop. Face Unlock, please.
And they got rid of the prototype that I showed that had the hole punch had the in-display fingerprint scanner. This does not. The Pixel 4 doesn't have one. It's complete. They're going the Apple route where they completely, like, they're all in on the face detection stuff.
Okay, that's the one thing that I was curious, I didn't know. So you were saying that the Pixel 4 will not have an in-display fingerprint sensor at all?
No. So the original prototype of the hole punch with just the camera had the in-display fingerprint scanner, and I think we showed marketing material for that. That prototype is not what they ended up going with, and they ended up going with this one. And similar to how when they announced the iPhone 10, Apple went all in on Face ID, and we're like, this is the future. Google's right. going to do the same thing. We're like, this is the future.
Now,
I think that's where tech's going, period. Like, that is so fascinating to me. Like, biometric scanning like that, where you don't even know what happened. It just works.
It's great, but now we have these rumors saying that Apple is going to re-implement Touch ID on next year's iPhones, or 2021, maybe.
Yeah, that's a decision that I don't get. Especially, you know how Samsung is like, make fun of Apple over the headphone jack and notches and stuff, and then they do it. That's what this feels like Apple doing to themselves. Like, they went all in on Face ID, said this is the future. They were committed to this. It feels weird to take a step back.
I don't think it's taking a step back at all.
Unless it's a phone without a notch.
I don't feel like it's taking a step back at all. I've complained for the last couple of years that Apple doesn't have multiple biometric points of entry. They need to.
Why?
Because Face ID is not 100%. It's not always exact. Sometimes it doesn't work. And then you got to put in a passcode instead of just going through the backup biometric point of entry, which would be a lot faster.
I've never had a problem with Face ID, so I'm biased.
Okay, I've had issues. And other people have had issues. So instead of putting a super passcode, there should be like a fingerprint option, then boom.
And this might be anti-tech enthusiast of me, but I don't like choices.
What? Oh, no wonder you like, well, Apple loves you, then you are.
I know, I just want it to work. This is how you're supposed to use the phone, Jaren. I'm like, okay. That's fine, but
it's the thing, though. So if Face ID doesn't work, then at least you have the backup option of using your thumbprint to get into the phone, though. Instead of having to type it up in a passcode.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to do that.
I never have that problem, though. Face ID just works for me.
See, that's because you got that germ faith. We don't have that germ faith.
That's why, yeah.
It's germ faith. John Prosser, baddest man in social media today. You got the tech fight coming this weekend. Do you have any parting word for your challenger, LB, LeBaron, LeBaron Burton? Do you have any last word for him?
Don't let your kids watch.
Oh, man. That is savage, John Prosser. That is savage.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. I respect LB, but not enough to let him win.
That's what's up. Yeah, I don't like a chance. I don't like a chance at all, but crazy things to happen, but I don't like a chance. Nope. But anyway.
No. It's gonna be so bad it's gonna look scripted.
Oh man. Oh, you were just tearing him up right now. Oh man. But like I told you. Don't underestimate him, man. Don't underestimate him. That's all I'm saying.
I won't.
All right.
Much.
No doubt. John Prosser, it's always a pleasure, man.
Thanks for having me on, dude.
No doubt. I would tell you to tell the people where they can find you, but the people know where they can find you. Just type in Front Page Tech on all the things, and you'll find John Prosser.
This was so cool because I got a notification on my phone. Mm-hmm. I'm just sitting here, phone goes off, and it's like, remember to watch Vipe Live in 30 minutes with special guest John Prosser. And I'm like, hey, that's me. I'm on now.
Yeah, me and you, man. I appreciate you rocking with me. Thank you, guys. For those of you that are watching on the YouTube Live audience, thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you. For those of you all audio only, thank you very much. I will have John Prosser's information in the show notes. If you're listening on audio only, if you're watching on YouTube, you already know how to get to him. So that much is already there. But I'm out of here. Thank you again to John Prosser for joining me. And we will be back next week for another edition of Vipe Drive. It'll be episode number 41.
Wow.
Crazy, John.
More episodes than Recycle Bin.
Really? Wow. Yeah.
Over double.
This was episode 40, yeah. So how many are you in?
Like 17, maybe?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. When we took that hiatus, you went full force.
Yeah, I've been trying to do these podcasts on a more frequent basis, so I try to do one every week, so I'm trying. And then some weeks I do
one every week, so it's been working out.
I appreciate you, man. I appreciate you. You know I always got eyes on you, no doubt, man. But we out of here, people. Y'all can catch us on the YouTube, the Twitters, or whatever you got to do. But until the next time, people, this your boy, Viper. the man about tech. You know where to find me. So come back for more.
I love it every time.
Woo!